Welcome to Growth Marketing Today, where marketers, designers, and product owners level up their growth marketing chops from experts in today's top startups. Here's your host, Ramley John.
Welcome to the 10th episode of Growth Marketing Today. In this episode, I have Desmond Choi, Head of Product Growth at Diamond. As a University of Waterloo grad, he really became plugged into the Kitchener-Waterloo startup scene here at the Silicon Valley of the North, being the VP of Operations at MapedIn and co-founding SparkGig. In this episode, you'll learn three things. First, how is Desmond able to get meetings with CIOs, VPs, and executives of enterprise companies? Second, he shows to us the 131 cold email format that helped Desmond get an open rate of 50 to 60% in his cold emails. And third, what tools he uses to launch his growth process for a startup. If you want the high-level outline and quotes from this episode, you can go to growthmarketing.today/010. Once again, that's growthmarketing.today/010. Ready? Here's my chat with Desmond. Hey everyone, I have here Desmond Waterloo. How's it going, Desmond? Thank you so much for taking the time out of your day.
Thank you for inviting. Doing well.
And what the heck, dude? You're moving to San Francisco, Silicon Valley, and you're here talking to me the day before you fly out, man.
Yeah, thank you.
That's absolutely crazy. Is this a permanent move?
No, it's temporary.
Okay.
Trying to help out Diamond and help it to grow it to a more mature state.
Cool. All right. Before we jump into Diamond, and maybe we can talk a little bit about your career. Your progression is kind of fascinating, right? You work with startups. Well, obviously, Waterloo, like Silicon Valley of the North. You started your own company and then now you're with Diamond. Can you talk a little bit about your career progression, how you got to where you're at as growth at Diamond?
Yeah, I think my first experience with tech venture, it was back in my first year of experience in University of Waterloo. It was just really lucky to have met the founding team of MapedIn.
Nice.
And since then, I've been getting involved with like startup growth and understanding a little bit about B2B business development. And a few years later, have a chance to start SparkGig. It's an online marketplace connecting with performers and event hosts. I was the CEO of that company and got some experience with fundraising, hiring, and all different fun stuff. And after I've graduated from University of Waterloo and have a chance to join this software startup in San Francisco.
Nice. And what can you tell, how did you get into Diamond? Like, what is Diamond for people, my listeners who are not familiar with it?
Yeah, so actually the co-founders of Diamonds are my roommates and my friends back in University of Waterloo.
Come on. Yeah, this is crazy how many startups like Pebble Watch, Talmic Labs, Kick, Vidyard, Waterloo. So this guy started your roommates?
So my roommate back in first year. But then at that time, we were all working on our own different companies.
Okay.
But then we always had this idea of building Iron Man for in real life. And that really triggered the idea of starting Diamond for them. Because right now we foresee that in order for us to build smart and helpful personal assistant, the first thing is we need to teach computers how to analyze documents. How can it sense what data and what piece of information that you have that's useful to you? So Diamond is a software we built to help companies to work better. Yeah.
Nice. And how long has Diamond been around for?
For 2 years now.
Cool. What's your role right now at Diamond?
My role at Diamond is head of growth.
Can you tell me a little bit about growth? I know Diamond seems like it's B2B. And then SparkGig was obviously B2C. Yep. It's a multi-sided market. Yep. And then MapedIn was B2B. It's like creating maps for other businesses. How do you see the difference between doing growth for SparkGig versus doing growth for something that's almost kind of new?
I think some of the similarities is that company at the early stage, I wouldn't even call it sales yet because there's no repeatable model. There's no a clear target market yet. Oftentimes, it's still at the business development stage where you're trying to just be friends, make friends in the industry. You're trying to know what problems people are facing. You're trying to understand what pain point people have. And you're trying to figure out what value can you add for companies. And that's what I do right now is to have a lot of meetings with different companies and figure out what are the pain points in terms of their business process, in terms of their data management process. Like, how can we optimize? How can we add value?
And then that's with SparkGig. How is that different then?
Yeah, with SparkGig, it was a little bit challenging because it was like a marketplace we're trying to build. There's the supply and demand. Mm. I would say there's event organizers and also there are the performers. So we actually spent a lot of time talking with both parties and we asked similar question. Like, we will just understand their workflow. Currently, how do you do things? Like, how do you find gigs? How do you book it? How will you organize it? And how do you deliver? And with event hosts, we asked them questions like the operation of things. Like, how do you find performers? What type of events are you trying to do? And really understand their process and what are the current problems are and see how SparkGig can add value to it.
Mm. Yeah. I feel like you mentioned something like repeatedly between SparkGig and also with Diamond. It's the word value.
Yeah.
What does that mean to you? Like, as a growth marketer, growth person, head of growth, what does value mean to you?
Yeah, I think in today's world, like, there's a lot of advertisement, there's a lot of noise. For me, I really look into like, how can we really create something that is beneficial for a client? It's not just something flashy that may not even impact your bottom line. Like, we really want to come in as a partner and understand what are the existing problems that they face and understand what are their deliverables and like, what are they trying to improve or aiming for. So right now with Diamond, a lot of the operational managers, CIO we talk to, what's important to them is to really increase the productivity level of their employees. So once we understand their KPI, once we understand their language, then we can shape our pitch and we can shape our product to really show that this is how we can impact that. This is how we can help that instead of trying to sell something that they might not need. Yeah.
I really like what you said earlier. You said like, these are stuff that you should be doing before you do sales.
Yeah.
And I feel like a lot of startups, and it's part of the reason, like, they're running out of cash. They maybe they raise some money. So there's a lot of pressure to make sales. And sometimes they don't know what they're selling. Right. And I think that you got it head on. Like, I think you need to focus on the value itself. Right. Walk me through, like, what kind of questions would you ask to really get to the pain point?
Yeah. So before the meeting, we will do our own research first and trying to list out all the players, I would say, like who is involved in this problem solution process. So for example, for Diamond, it's not just trying to make the life of the manager better, but really at the end of the day, it's how can we make the employees to work better? Mm. So before the meeting, we'll need to map out, for example, who will be the potential users? Is it the recruiter? Is it the marketing person? And later on, we mapped out who is the decision maker, like who is going to be the one that buying this product and who is going to be involved in this decision-making process. We list them out as well and we're trying to list out all the process in between. But these are all assumptions. These are all things that we think it exists.
Right.
So during that meeting with the person we talked to, we're just trying to ask them questions to validate like what we're guessing. Is it correct? Like, you know, can you tell us a bit about maybe how you do sales? Tell us about how you do recruitment. And based on those feedback, we'll improve the draft we have. And we're trying to figure out, okay, who is the decision maker of this company? And then we ask those questions.
Mm. And there's another thing you said. I like feeding off people's answers. You said that you're constantly improving what you're going to ask next. Because like there's V1 versus V2 versus V10 of the questions you're asking is a lot different. Can you like tell me like some things that you were asking earlier were like, now you look back, it's like, man, what were we thinking? That's like, those are dumb questions. Not necessarily dumb, like, oh, it's dumb. More so like looking back now, it's like, oh, now we're smarter now.
Yeah.
What were some of the progressions of line of questioning and insights that you pulled?
Yeah, I think it's always encouraging to see like when you go into the meeting, you thought, you know, the user is going to love this feature. It's going to love what we're going to do.
Yeah.
And then at the end of the presentation, we realized that actually he didn't like that feature, but he was interested in something that's minor or like something that you didn't even know.
Right.
But that's what they would pay for. So I would say sometimes in a sales meeting, just be open-minded and figure out what caught their attention and what interests them the most and try to elaborate on those points.
Right.
And try to set up like a follow-up meeting and trying to have more follow-up information for that point.
Can you give an example of something that happened for Diamond? If you could, I know like I'm not sure if you're behind the closed doors right now and you're...
Yeah, I can share some examples. So one company we met recently. So before going into the meeting, I thought they would be interested in enterprise search. And that's what most of the presentation it's tailored towards. But towards the end of the presentation, they were asking us a lot of questions about the analytics dashboard. Mm. They want to know about what their employees are searching, and also they're interested in what knowledge employees are accessing. And that was quite interesting because in the past, all the sales meetings I had, it was people were more interested in the first few features we have. Mm. But this one gave us a new insight to it where we can actually add more value to the customer, not just providing a search system, but also have an analytics board to show what their employees are searching.
That is so cool. Mm. I think that's what I find with a lot of growth people and growth marketers is sometimes people have this rigidity of what they believe is the most important feature. Or whatever they have. But what I'm hearing is like, you have to be flexible enough and even sensitive enough to like, oh, they're starting to get bored with this feature. We should start focusing on something else.
Yeah, I think especially for at the business development stage where you don't have that much validation yet. Mm. I think during that stage, you have to be come in with an open mind and really listen to the customer and see what they're interested in. Yeah.
Now, I know I'm trying to take a step back here. How did you get the meetings? Like, these are busy people. Like, they're CIOs, operations. What kind of things do you send emails? I know emails work a lot. LinkedIn. What were some of the tactics that you used to get those initial meetings?
First off, I would try to get like a warm introduction.
Nice.
That's like my first aim. Yeah. So there are a lot of tools to help. Like I think LinkedIn is one of the best tools. You can search up a company and see who you're connected with and ask your friend to do a short intro. And then if not, then I would just do email outreach. Mm. I find if your email, it's like I use like a 1-3-1 format.
So, okay, what is that?
So one thing I learned is email, it's like you don't want to give out too much information in the email because if they know...
It's like that whole essay. I've got a like email from salespeople like, essay man, like I don't...
Yeah, like people hate that stuff. And also even on the title, right? Like if you give out too much information, they would just delete it. So what just I find is like you want to keep it minimal. But like you want them to feel they're not missing out.
Right.
So you want to, usually what I do is I put their name.
In the subject.
In the subject line.
So like Ramley dash.
Dash then, Diamond.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So at least they'll open it because
this is
their name, right?
Yeah. It's so, like, oh, you know my name. So yeah. I'm going to open this email. Okay, that's great. Yeah, so you got them open. Like
yeah,
how do you
get open.
Them?
So I think first thing is get them open. And then second thing is I usually write, John, I'm going to keep this short. And then I would just have 3 points. So for us, it's like Diamond is a enterprise search engine, can optimize your employee workflow. And then number two is like you talk about the second value you can offer. And then the third point is also like something that you can add value to it. And then the 1-3-1 format, the last one is like ask. So you want to say,
okay. All right.
Hi, I just want to get 15 minutes of your time, set up a call and see if it's a good fit for your company.
Cool.
And then you just have a signature in the bottom.
1-3-1.
Yeah.
What is the, I know ask is like, so they see the value. Is your ask traditionally the 15-minute call or like have you tried like, hey, click on this link? Like what have you tried in terms of the ask?
From my experience, I think scheduling a 15-minute call, the response rate is actually quite high.
Oh, cool.
But make sure that we nail
the
value really well. Like we'll give them examples like by implementing Diamond, you can save like 20% of your team's operational time. And we also have specific things that we provide document indexing for Dropbox, Google Drive, and email so your team don't have to go back and forth on things.
Cool.
And usually they respond to email like they want to learn more and schedule a phone call. And the phone call is really, I would say, the sales. Like actually getting to know more about them and actually pitching the company.
Cool.
Yeah, the email I would say is just trying to establish like an initial
relationship.
Touch point. Yeah.
Yeah. What is the one part? I know the three is the values. Like here's what we can offer. The last one is the ask. What was the first one again?
The faster first one, I would just say hi. Let's say their name is John and I would just want to keep it short. Just usually the format.
Just want to keep it short.
Just keep it short. We're and diamond. Then I'll just jump in.
We're diamond. Here's our value to you.
Yep. So 3 points of values. And then the bottom part is to ask.
Where do you learn this? Like trial and error? Or
especially from one of my friend from Velocity Garage. And we just have a team of like what we call like the mastermind group.
What the heck?
So like as head of sales of each company, we meet up every week. We share some of the best practice we have in like cold calling, emailing, and different things. And that was like the email template that I find like super helpful.
What is the typical like response rate? Like just off the top of you? I know like you don't have your laptop here.
So open rate, it's actually extremely high.
Yeah.
It's above like 50-60%.
Wow.
So that's really like good. Really good.
For a cold
rate,
email.
Yeah, for a cold email. Open rate. Shoot. It's like the best I've tried. The content is... it varies between like different industry.
Right.
But usually I get like pretty good respond rate. If the first email doesn't reply, always do follow-up emails. Mm. Like I find usually I would need to follow up 2 or 4 times to get them to respond. But people generally respond. Like just keep it short. Don't write essay email. The follow-up email should be like, hey, just want to follow up with my last email.
Right.
And then they'll read the first email.
What's your like schedule? Like I know there's a term called sales cadence where like first email and then you wait 2 days. How many days do you wait before you send a follow-up email?
Yeah, usually for me, it's 48 hours
between
the first one and the second one. And then after the second one, I would do 12 hours.
A
shorter period of time. Yeah.
There's this whole concept with growth that I guess they hide behind this wall. Maybe they're afraid to talk to customers. Like they'd rather just send the emails and not really talk to people. And there's actually a lot of value to doing growth and also being able to do sales, right? To be able to find out the pain points that you're doing. Is that what you're finding? Like there's actually, for you, it helps to be able to talk to the customers.
Yeah.
And also, you know, do other growth marketing stuff if you had to.
Yeah, I think emailing is just helping with the initial, like the prospecting, like lead generation.
Right.
And then it doesn't sell the product at that point, at least not for Diamond, because Diamond is enterprise software.
Right.
There's a proposal stage and there's implementation stage. So the sales cycle, it's quite long.
Right.
It ranges from 2 weeks to 6 weeks. So usually email doesn't close the sales directly. Sometimes with other company, like with SparkGig, it does actually.
Yeah.
The sales cycle is much shorter, so it works. But with Diamond, the email, it helps you to have the first initial conversation and then it usually leads to a phone call.
Right.
And then you schedule like an in-person presentation or we invite them to join our webinar.
Also, you do webinars. So what is… Before I jump into the tactics…
Yeah.
I know a lot, like I'm that kind of person. I'm a growth marketer. I'm shy. Like I don't want to do sales, but I see the value of being able to talk to the customers and not necessarily sell to them, but ask the right questions. If there are listeners here who are afraid to take that jump, what kind of tips? Were you always like this? Like were you always like, man, I'm a sales guy. I can sell shit. Or were you like, I had to learn it. And if you do have to learn it, what kind of things did you do that you would suggest us do?
Yeah, I think… Before getting into growth, like I always have like a negative like feeling towards sales.
Yeah, like, those car salesmen, sleazy car salesmen, right?
It always felt like they want to close sales without knowing who I am, knowing my needs and knowing what I want. But I think like one story really changed my perspective is like, let's say your mom… Okay, so let's say your friend, they are feeling really sick and they need to take this medicine and you have access to it. By referring this medicine to them, you're actually selling them this product.
Right. It's not really selling. It's more like referral.
Yeah, it's like a referral. Mm. And during day-to-day, like we always sell stuff too. Like we hang out with our friends, like which restaurant you want to go to and like or which movie you want to go to. You always recommend products, like recommend a movie. You're actually doing a sales right there, but then you don't feel like it. So at the end of the day, I think as a like a growth hacker, I would say, it's really understand the customer need and have empathy towards it actually understand what they're struggling with and understand how can your product really help them. And my perspective is I'm not trying to sell you. I'm just trying to refer my product to you to try to solve your problem. if you say no, I don't get offended. And if right. there's a better solution, I want to know too, because I want to improve my product.
Right.
But I just want to, like, whatever I sell, I usually really sincerely and believe in the product that can actually help you to solve the problem.
Nice.
That's the perspective I have. Yeah.
I really like that. I think it's like, it's a perception thing. Like, it's, I think people have to get over like that sleazy salesman image out of their mind. And you're more trying to find out their problems, first of all. And secondly, like, maybe if your solution can solve those problems. Like, I really love what you said about sickness. If they're sick, first you got to find out what is their sickness, what kind of symptoms they have. And then thirdly, like, well, maybe is there some kind of medicine that you can offer?
Yeah. Like, sometimes I even direct them to our like alternative solution or to our competitor as well.
Right.
Because sometimes we may not just be the best fit, right?
Yeah.
And sometimes I think, if you bring in the wrong customer, actually it can harm your business than helping your company.
Yeah.
But if you show that you care for them and you actually recommend something that is not what you're offering, you build the long-term relationship. Mm. And sometimes, you know, people switch companies and then they remember who you are. They come back to you down the road. And it happens to us a few times.
Cool. I think that's so absolutely like so true. Like, you need to not close doors. I feel like some salespeople, they push too hard and then it just turns me off, right?
Yeah, for sure.
It's weird, we're talking a lot about sales. Like I said, I keep saying this. There's definitely lots of value in not selling, but doing research and talking to customers as a growth marketer. You were starting to talk about webinars. Like, so tell me about that. Like, what is the webinars that you guys do? Like, what does your strategy look like as a whole?
Yep. So actually, we just implemented a few weeks ago.
Nice.
So
fresh off the press. Yeah.
So we have a lot of leads and interest coming in from email. So they would send us an email saying that they would love to learn more. And we will schedule a call with them. And during that call, we're trying to figure out what problems they have. And also, how can we best help them to solve those problems and understand who are the decision makers. And usually they will ask for like additional information, like a proposal, or they would like to schedule a meetup. But sometimes they will reject. They're like, oh, I don't have time right now, or right now we're too busy on other things. And usually that's the time we want to send them like a link to a webinar.
Mm.
And just to really understand like a little bit about the product, it's basically a 15-minute video to show how to use our product and also how we can potentially solve the problem. And
nice.
This video is pre-recorded actually. And then we'll ask them when they're available to join in and we send them a link and they can watch the video and we can track like when they join, when they stop watching it. And from there, we can improve the content.
Cool. What kind of tools do you use to run that? Is there a specific tool that you use?
Yeah. So actually, there's a startup in Kitchener and Waterloo. They do it really well. Vidyard. Cool.
Vidyard, okay.
Yeah,
they do this now. They do pre-recorded stuff.
So they help you to host videos.
Okay.
So they don't record it for you, but then there's like a platform to host video. So you can get a lot of business analytics from there.
Nice. And then let's talk about tools for a second. Like, what kind of tools do you use email-wise, booking-wise, anything else? Like,
I use for emailing for my CRM system because a lot of our sales are around emailing. So I use a system called Streak.
Streak, yep.
Yeah, so Streak is actually founded by Waterloo.
I know. Moved to San Francisco.
Yeah. So it's a great product. It can help you to schedule emails, set up templates, and it can track like open rate as well.
Nice.
And that's like a really easy to use software. It's not as complex as Salesforce or something else.
Yeah, Salesforce is a mess.
So we use that for emailing. And then for our email campaign, we just use MailChimp.
Cool.
Yeah. So those are like two key things. We also use Mixpanel for a campaign we nice. Have. Yeah.
And then in terms of your calls, do you use Zoom or do you use JoinMe?
So for calls, actually, we just use our phone call, but then we keep our notes in Streak as well. So Streak allows you to enter your phone conversation and stuff.
Let's talk a little bit about Waterloo. Like, I graduated there in 2008, and that was like before Velocity, before Commuted Tech. What is happening in Waterloo, man? Like, tell me, when I did my startup there, Velocity Garage, it was like, this is awesome. Can you talk a little bit about like what you think is happening in that city of Kitchener, Waterloo?
Yeah, sure. I graduated from Waterloo 2014.
What did you study?
Sociology.
Okay. We got to talk about it later.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
All right. So you graduated from Waterloo.
I remember when I was with Mapdin that time and Velocity was just starting out like the first few years. And it started off with a really tight community with around like 40 to 60 people. A really small group.
Students or like alumni?
Student.
Nice.
So that was like the second year. And previous year, I left Velocity and joined Diamond. And at that point, they have like a couple hundred people. And they expand from just software to like hardware to science company to labs. Like it just exploded. And I think what's great about Velocity comparing with many other incubator or university group, it's really the culture of learning from each other and supporting each other. Because I spent a year living in New York. I was part of the NYU incubator.
Okay.
And I was part of other accelerator as well.
Were you part of DMZ by any chance here at Ryerson?
No, I wasn't part of the DMZ, but I was part of other like Toronto accelerator stuff. But I think Waterloo has a really strong community. It's like you can always reach out to alumni. You can always reach out to someone who is 6 months ahead of you, 12 months ahead of you, and ask them for questions. And those kind of feedback and mentoring, it's super helpful for the journey.
And like they boast that every cohort of Y Combinator, which is this big accelerator that launched like Dropbox and a bunch of other ones, they always have one company from Velocity Garage that joins that Y Combinator, right?
Yeah.
So you said talked about culture, how they're helping each other. Is there any other cultural stuff that they do well that you find like is so unique there?
Yeah, I think Waterloo always encourage their students to solve big problems and big challenges. Yeah. They're doing it really well because I think like students, we don't have that much experience in life and we don't know what are the problems out there. And we actually need to be inspired and we need to be educated in terms of what are the problems out there in our society that's worth solving? And what are the billion-dollar problem? Because if you focus on a problem that's too small, even you're successful, but your company might not be that big. But Velocity, they really help us to understand figuring out what you're passionate about and also how can you align it with a big problem.
That's so cool. Like, it's funny you said that. I remember in my graduation, the guy who gave the talk in 2008, he said that exact thing. Like he was a professor there. He was like, solve hard things. Is that something that you heard in your…
Yeah, I think Larry Smith is like one of the promoter, like one of the leader in Waterloo. And he always emphasized on like solving big problems.
Cool.
And I think that's it's a good reminder for entrepreneur because sometimes we want to start a company, we jump into like restaurant, fashion, social media. But actually there are way more challenging problems in the world that needs innovation, that's need to be changed. And those are the good opportunity for entrepreneurs to step in.
Nice. Now you said you studied sociology. Like, can you have ever imagined like being where you're at studying sociology? Like, is that something that you foresaw or your path from to get here is like, whoa, how did I get here?
So actually I started my first business in grade four. I was doing web design and web hosting.
Heck, dude.
And since the young age, I start like different business. And but I never knew that entrepreneur is like a lifestyle. It can be a career. I thought it was just like a side hobby. I thought it was just what I'm interested in.
Right.
And it's until like in grade 12, I got involved with a nonprofit group called Impact Entrepreneurs.
Impact, right, yeah.
And they were promoting entrepreneurship to high school students. And that's the time I realized that, oh wow, like there are a lot of tech entrepreneurs from University of Waterloo. And I realized that it's not by chance. It's not a coincidence. Like if you want to become an entrepreneur, you need to surround yourself with entrepreneurs. You need to get the mindset. And looking at all the different schools out there, programs out there, I knew that I want to be part of University of Waterloo because just looking at the successful entrepreneurs that graduated from that school, I realized there's something different that Waterloo can offer. And to be honest, I'm not good at math. I'm not good at science. And I can't apply to any engineering program.
That's funny.
And I actually don't like academic study too much. And I was actually majoring in econ because that was a little bit close to business.
Right.
But then I was taking sociology as an elective. And during that class, we learn about statistics. We learn about how policy shapes society. We understand how everything we see in a society is by design. Like education is by design. The whole economic system is by design. The legal system is design. And that was really fascinating because in business, we are designing a new reality for a consumer.
Mm.
And sociology helps us to understand like things that we live in today is not given by chance, but actually it's by design. And they give you like the tools, like stats. They teach you like different policy making process. And those things actually helped me a lot with my company because it constantly challenged me to rethink like how can this business reshape the society? How can this reshape an organization?
Like you're designing what the future will look like.
Yeah, that's the great thing about sociology.
It's like you're creating this. Sorry, it's getting me excited. Like it's just you're not predicting. You're actively pushing society towards what you believe society should be.
I think like that's what entrepreneur does, right? They imagine what the world can be, and they're the one that create it, and they're the one that to make it happen. And I think startup is doing exactly that. They look into existing industries, existing reality, but they think that it can be better. So they pursue it and they innovate, they design, and the new product, the new things they implement is the new reality.
Wow. You talked about the word entrepreneurial mindset. What does that look like? I know that's it's a buzzword to certain circles, but what is the entrepreneurial mindset to you?
That term to me means that when you see problems, it's an opportunity.
Wow.
So when you face challenges, I believe that the result, the potential return will be greater or equal to the challenge. And for entrepreneurs, we don't always guarantee like good returns and like you always like get a good benefit or a good paycheck at the end of the day. But I see it as a journey because when I read a bibliography of successful entrepreneurs like Warren Buffett or even Steve Jobs, they all started at a really young age. They all work on many different projects. Right. And sometimes as entrepreneur, we compare ourselves with really successful entrepreneurs, but we don't look into what they were doing when they were our age. And we don't look into their failure as well. And I think the entrepreneurial mindset is really be humble and just constantly learning, just constantly admitting to myself that I don't know anything and I just need to learn. I just need to read more.
Wow.
And keep pushing yourself forward and solve problems. Yeah.
I want to talk a little bit about that because I'm writing like an article right now or blog post about how like if I was going to hire somebody, I want to hire an entrepreneur. And that sounds kind of contradictory, but there are certain people who are built to solve. They have that mindset to like if there's a problem, I'm going to figure out around it. Are you a partner at Diamond? Like, or did they recruit you or hired you as head of growth there?
So I joined as like a founding team.
Nice.
I'm more the head of growth there. Yeah.
Oh, okay. So would you ever be an employee somewhere where, you know, they hired you as an entrepreneurial person in a company?
So actually, beside work, I do a lot of volunteer work with charities and nonprofits as well. And I do that quite often
too. What kind of charities are you volunteering right now?
So I'm part of this group called City Movement. So it's a Christian organization. So
with Tim Day.
Yeah, Tim Day is the leader. One challenge they're facing right now is a lot of churches, they work on their own. They don't collaborate that much. And there are a lot of resources are not being utilized at the max. And they're trying to re-strategize how can they build the channel to connect churches and nonprofit to collaborate more.
That's cool.
To generate more value to the society.
That's cool.
So they have a think tank where they invite different people to come in. And I was part of it. And I was giving suggestions on how can they apply some of the startup lean startup model to figure this problem and how can they apply some of the entrepreneurial practice to help the organization to grow.
That's cool. I'm meeting with Tim this Friday.
Oh, awesome. Tim is a great mentor of mine.
He's talking at this organization called Faith Tech, which I volunteer at, which
is
trying to make.
Yeah, James Kelly. I know him well. Yeah.
Small world, dude. And that's my heart too, like entrepreneurship and nonprofit. And that's something that I've been trying to get at is this is what I envision things should be and how do I push society to get there. I'd like to wrap up very soon. I'd like to ask two more questions. First of all, is there any tips you have for people who are early on in their career and they're trying to get to growth or sales or wherever you're at right now? What would be some tips that you would have for them?
I think sometimes for growth, even for myself, I was at an early stage of my career. I was always trying to look for the gold model or like the gold standard of doing things. Is there something I can copy and paste? But unfortunately, there isn't because technology is moving at a super quick pace. And like with internet, like things spread really quick. And I find if you want to have a really good marketing campaign or a really good sales strategy, that strategy cannot be widely adopted yet because the acquisition cost is going to be really high. Mm. Because if everyone is doing the same thing, then you're not doing it right.
Right.
So you need to always constantly look for the niche that you have. But that process is really hard. I don't know yet, but then all I know is that if you're comfortable with your process, you're already behind the game.
Wow.
You need to always keep reading, subscribe to thought leaders
right.
on Twitter or on blogs. Always look for like stories like, and then try to see if you can copy them or trying to see anything you can learn from them. But never get too comfortable with your wow. system because nowadays startups are getting more competitive. You're competing not just with Canadian startups, you're competing all around the world.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is so good. I'm going to repeat that again. If you're comfortable with the process already, you're already behind. Like that's tweetable right there, man. I'm going to tweet that out after this. The last thing I have is, where can we find you, man? Like, where can we find Diamond? Do you have a blog? Like, what is the domain for Diamond if people are looking for? And what kind of companies are you trying to reach out to?
Yeah, so our company domain is diamond.io. And you can reach out to me on Twitter. It's at Desmond Choi. And our Diamond Twitter is just Diamond.io as well. So Diamond right now, we're providing our enterprise solution to optimize internal search for company team size ranges from 20 to 50 or above. We have different solution for different size of the company.
Any specific industry and companies that you're looking for?
So right now, we have a range of 200 different customers.
Okay.
Ranges from professional services to design firms and tech companies.
Awesome, man. Well, thank you so much, Desmond. And good luck with the move to Silicon Valley, man.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you. Thanks for listening in to this episode. Now, one of the things that Desmond said that I really love is he said, can't copy and paste a model because technology is moving at a super quick pace. So you have to have a process for growth. And that's what we promote here at Growth Marketing Today, process over hacks or tactics. If you want the high-level outline and any quotes from this episode, you can go to growthmarketing.today/010. Now, if you liked it and enjoy it, come on, subscribe to this show on iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher so that we can get the word out even more to more people like designers, marketers, or product people who are really into growth. You can also sign up for our Insider Club community at growthmarketing.today to get the latest news and even join our members-only Slack community. Any questions or feedback that you have? Come on, feel free to send me an email at ramley@growthmarketing.today and I promise I won't bite. Now, in next week's episode, I'm super excited. I chat with Bennett, the former head of marketing at Turnstile before they got acquired with Yelp. So you'll see the growth process of a company and a startup that got so big or became successful so much so that Yelp acquired them. Now, this is Ramley from Growth Marketing Today, and don't stop growing.